I decided again also to do something in the morale on Purim. The sheets that you have here are, there are two, the first two pages are a photocopy of what it looks like in the Sefer, just for quality control. And then the next six pages, what I did was I paragraphed it, made numbers so that it's easier to find and to follow. And also I darkened in the pieces that are quotes from the Medrash. It just makes it a bit easier to follow along. It's not an easy sefer, and I felt it would be much more effective that way. And as I explained before, the morale is probably this sefer that goes to the heart of explaining Agaritas. Agaritas are, as children we see them as stories, as adults we tend to oversimplify it, and sometimes it's quizzical, sometimes it's strange. It's interesting that in the morale's time, which was 500 years ago, one of the big issues with people who poked fun at Chazal was specifically Agaritas. Very few things have changed in the world. And this was a sore issue. The morale felt it was because people didn't learn it with the proper depth. And therefore, his Sfarim are on, many of Sfarim deal with Yontiv, Perkei Avos, Midos, a lot of Sfarim, a lot of different topics. But sort of the overarching principle is, if you look at Chazal and you understand the depth that they're coming with, you get a whole new series of dimensions to the Inyanim. So he has a sefer on Purim called Or Chodesh, as you see in the photocopy, and it goes through. It's quite a big sefer. It goes through an entire Megillah. What it does is he takes every pasuk that has a Chazal in it and explains it, sometimes with tremendous at length. He also sometimes goes off a bit on a tangent, because if the Chazal included other material, he will explain each and every piece of it, and he feels it's sort of his mission. I've taken two pieces that deal with a central point, and that I think there are three main themes sort of coming out. And I'll try to skip the pieces, that's why I paragraphed it with numbers, so that we'll be able to stick more to the point. But I'll try my best to sort of get the flow and so on. And once again, if there are things if I lapse into Yiddish, Hebrew, etc., don't feel free to ask. It's just it's part of the occupational hazards of teaching yeshiva, that English is not always the first language, or at least not conventional Queen's English. So I will try my best to explain it as best as I can. Let's start with the Nekuda. Let's start with the point that he's dealing with. We have a high point. Haman comes home and he tells his wife, honey, what are we going to do with Mordechai? To rephrase Rabbi Reingold's statement. And she's a she's an Eishes Chava, Eishes Chayil, and she says, I've got a great idea. We're going to take a tree, a post, 50 amos high, and hang him. And he says, great idea. And then he gets hung on it. The Megillah is a tiny, tiny paragraph, the entire Megillah, on events that took place over years, over almost a decade. So obviously, I mean, even Lahavul Elf Abdullah, if a half-intelligent person was writing it, you would say that every line counts. A good writer, when he describes a scene, is not just looking for words to fill up a book. Everything is crucial. So you have a paragraph. What should I do with him? Hang him 50 amos high, good idea, and so on. Why hanging? And the morale will raise this question. I'm just sort of trying to give the three points, I guess, that are going to come through, the three themes, so to speak, is why 50 amos high? Why hanging? Why is this such a crucial piece of as the ending? And why was it done in such haste? Those are three of the points that he'll be describing. I want to add another point, more in general about these things. For instance, when Haman said, let's hang him on something that's 50 high, and he's going to be explaining what that 50 is, and it's going to be quite deep and so on, did Haman think of it? Did Mrs. Homer, think of it. Was that actually the thought process? It seems the morale in a lot of places will understand it in the following way. The Medrash uses a term, nibav lo yada maniba. It's like the person said something, and it was a prophecy, and he himself didn't realize what he was saying. In other words, the Torah arranged, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that things happen in a specific way for specific reasons. The person himself may have just blurted it out, it just sounded good, but there is in an event as crucial as the saving of Klal Yisrael, the uprooting of Klal Yisrael's bitterest enemy, and so on, it's an extraordinary event, and every little piece of it is going to be very meaningful. I want to add a piece, not related to morale, but something that, on a personal level, I guess a sentiment I'd like to share with people. You know, Purim is a fun yontiv. It comes across in a very nice way, fun and so on and so forth. Even within proper limits, it's still, I think we fail to get the impact of what it is. And let me explain to you why I think we fail to get the impact of it and why it's unfortunate. My parents, my father's Ben Ibrahim, my mother, were survivors. They lost a wife, children, brothers, sisters, mother, father, etc., everything. Now, after the Holocaust, we can only think of what would have been if Hitler would have tripped over and died before he started it. Now that we suffer through it, we can go back and say, if only that would have happened, who knows, you know, how much horrendous amount of tsar would have been avoided in the world. The Jews, Ahasuerus was a total, absolute dominion over the world. Jews lived totally under his rule. And anything that would have happened was going to happen to everybody. There was no place to escape to. There was no other country. And everything was set to go for a total extermination. The Holocaust was ready to happen. And Purim is the Holocaust that didn't happen. As simple as that. And unfortunately, it's like always, it's like when a person is saved from some disaster, it's as hard to appreciate it as when a person had a disaster and wishes it would have been different. I always think about it. You know, this is what could have been if God would have saved us, I think it would make our simcha a little bit different. This is a very personal feeling because my parents are survivors and so on, that I keep thinking about it, that this is what it was. It was worse than Hitler because there was no place to go to. There was not an other country, and everything was, the final solution was set to go. Everything was in place. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. So it's something, just a personal feeling about what to think about. Now let's take a look at what he says here. Vatomu lo Zeresh ishtav kol oavav. Zeresh, his wife, told him. So this black, on page one, in the more, on the third page, I guess it is. It's page one. This is where I've simply paragraphed it and made it much easier to read and so on. Vatomu lo Zeresh ishtav. Yesh lo hakshos, he says, I mean, this is the advice. It's written as an advice. He sort of counts to he says, the pasuk didn't have to give us the chit chat between him and his wife about what to do, unless the pasuk seems to say that this was an exceptionally wise counsel. All we needed to have said was, she should have said, tell the king to kill him. What difference does it make? Hang him, whatever it is. And also he says, why 50 amma? And once again, whatever she might have said, but the Megillah records only things that are of real significance, and these things have to have some significance to make it, to record it, for eternity, so that we can look back at it and understand what was going on. So in number two, he says something, I'll say it out loud. He says a simple teretz. He said, Haman was bothered by the fact that it wasn't Mordechai as a person that bothered him. He realized that Mordechai is simply a representative of the Jewish people. And as long as there'll be Jews, it's going to be the same. They're going to, the Jews are going to resist deifying Haman. They're going to keep their own halachas and so on. And he wanted to do something that would be extremely, he wanted to do something that would hit home, not at Mordechai, but at Mordechai as a representative of Klal Yisrael. And that's why he picked something, Eitz Chamishim. He says, because he was a Sar Chamishim, and therefore, because of his chashivas, he would be killed. So he, in other words, it was sort of representing, I am hanging the most important of Jews, the king of the Jews, so to speak, and that's why I'm getting back at everybody else. That's a simple logical answer, and then he's going to go with some depth, which I think actually sort of complements it. Paragraph 3. This is a very, very deep point. Haman wasn't somebody who came to try and get the Jews to worship a god like the Greeks and so on. Haman was an egomaniac, and he was so assured of himself and so full of himself that he felt himself to be a god. And let's understand what that means. V'yadua, even Moshe Rabbeinu, it says on him in the Gemara, Memtes share bina nivroim ba'olam v'kula nusur l'moshe. Shenema v'techasreyu me'at min elokim. Ki shar chamishim lo nimsa la'odam. So it says in the Gemara that there are 49 gates of wisdom, and Moshe Rabbeinu had attained all of them. He was missing a 50th. And he says, Kishar hamishim lo nimsa l'adam, ke olam hazeh nivra b'zayin yomim. V'kashar temashlim shiva, dainu lasos merube echot shu shiva, hu mem tes. V'sharnun atzma shachlom hazeh. Let me first explain the words of the sentence, and then we'll talk about it. He says, the world was created in 7 days. When you square the 7, you get 49, and the 50 is not part of it. Those are the words that he says, and that's the translation. Let's talk a bit about, and let's explain this. It is obvious, if we were to ask ourselves, what is the distinction between science with a capital S when it stands vis-a-vis religion, versus science with a small s? And one would say the following. A person can understand, and a person can understand many things. And a person understands a tremendous amount of things, and our knowledge keeps growing, and so on. But is it true that our mind understands everything? Not knows everything, can understand everything, and it doesn't exist if it's impossible for us to understand. Can I come across and say it makes no sense, and therefore it's not true or it's not possible? I have one of my kids was a very early speaker, and you know it's very cute when a little kid says funny, you know, like grown-up phrases. So this boy was a 3-year-old boy at the time, and he got into a fight with probably one of his siblings about something, an argument, not a fist fight, but an argument. And he was exasperated, and he said, in all my life, I've never heard anything like this. And it was very, very funny. But and let's say we're 100 years old. In saying it doesn't make sense, that's a truth. Saying it doesn't make sense and therefore it's not, or I've rejected it, that takes a tremendous leap and says that if there is nothing in the world but my mind, and anything that doesn't fit into my mind just doesn't exist. That's the big leap that we're making. And I think this is where, and that's when people ask me, is, you know, and when people speak about the contradiction, the great contradiction between science and religion, I tell them, well, science with a small s doesn't contradict religion. Science with a big s, it's either or. We understand it as following. HaKadosh Baruch Hu started a point with Bereishis. And that's where the world started. From that point onwards till the end of 7 days includes HaKadosh Baruch Hu incorporated all the laws of science, everything that's in this world, not only physical, but all the factors, all the relationships, everything is in this world is in those seven. We can spend many lifetimes working out, and that's called seven times seven. In other words, I see rocks, and I see water, and I see trees, and I see animals, but do animals contain any rock material in them? What are the laws that govern rock material? What are the laws that govern water? What are the laws? It's a huge, 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 incredible amount of knowledge, understanding, and so on. But this is all called 49 gates. In other words, it's within a certain framework. It starts with one and ends with I don't know what. But you know, the largest number in the universe is theoretically the amount of elementary particles in the universe. More than that doesn't mean anything. So it's an incredible number, but it's finite. It goes from one to whatever that number is. That is what the Maral explains is described by Chazal as 49 gates of wisdom. In other words, the fleshing out of everything that's in that's in creation. So it's creation times itself, every single aspect and element of it, of its interactions and variations and everything about it. We live with the understanding that there is a point beyond. And that point is infinite. It's not a point. It's not a 50th piece. 50 means the piece that is beyond that which is in our structure. So just like if you'd have a calculator that can add up to 49 and that's its limits, it can do calculation up to 49, anything past that is 50. What's the difference between 50 and 51 if the calculator only get up to 49? It doesn't make a difference. So we describe knowledge, understanding, accomplishment, everything that is at the heart of what we value human being as being 49 gates versus the 50th. And the 50th is that which is beyond. Now, in the functioning of laws of nature, I come along and I say, well, you can't split the sea. It's impossible. You can't have the sun stand still. Well, in the world of nature, it is an impossibility. That's correct. And therefore, it is not a natural phenomenon. In the world of beyond nature, anything is possible because I don't have... It's not that I know what's there. It's more that I don't know what's there. I'm not it. I'm not part of it. And I can't say anything about it. So we look at Nisim, for instance, of coming at the 50th. So the most accomplished human being, he understands 49 and understands that there is a 50th, but that's not him. So he says, now, we find time and again that despots there's a process where it's a common thread in history. People go through different events. They're saved miraculously. They seem to manage to no revolt is able to, against them, and so on and so forth. And slowly, the person begins to think of himself as being beyond the laws of nature. It wasn't Paro thinking he's a god and Haman deifying himself. And Hitler deifying himself. Hitler also had this thing about, I read once, you know, like, I've been saved so many times, it's an unearthly power. I mean, you know, it's hard to one does not want to step into the footsteps of a deranged, of a horribly deranged person. But the idea is a person's sense of self, when he doesn't feel he's bound by the world, by its rules, by its regulations, is to step off and think of himself as a god. Someone told me a terrible story. Many years ago, somebody was speaking to a person who was extremely successful and so, you know, headed for the moon, so to speak. And this person began cutting corners in a lot of terrible ways. And my acquaintance told him something about it. And the person said, rules and regulations are not made for me, not for the likes of me. And this was a person who wasn't criminal, I don't think, in his basic, but it got to his head because the sense of kind of maybe I'm more than a mere earthling. I'm able to get this and this and this and this and this. The person prophetically answered him, yeah, that's what they made jails for. An unfortunate person went through a very terrible situation with the law. But it's an at the heart, the worst yitzhar of a human being is to want to sort of transcend the sense that I'm bound by things and I'm beyond law, morality, etc., etc. And this is, so he said, no person, not even someone as accomplished as Moshe Rabbeinu, ever made it there. The Haman, she'asatz mavodah zara, Haman, who made himself davodah zara, ama, ki yesh po inya loki, he sensed that he's kind of divine. You know, I've gone so far, so fast, so much power, I'm de facto ruler of Persia, and no one can stand in my way. I am beyond humans. It's basically I am hanging him from the platform that I stand on. I am hanging him from the 50th Amma because that is this is my station in life. And that's what his advisors told him. At that point, you're going to be able to vanquish him. That's, in other words, if we're to look for the appropriate venue for you to get one better Mordechai, it's this because you are divine and he's mortal. So he says, I'm skipping a line or two. His downfall was because he pushed himself to a place that a person doesn't belong. A person, invariably, a person who pushes beyond the limits, the rules, the regulations, the constraints, When a person moves past that, he will fall because there's no place for a human being that doesn't have it. And I want to explain this because this is something that is so it's something that is almost counterintuitive to us, and yet it's a very important point. Everybody in life has restrictions. Everybody has his financial restrictions. Everybody has his mental restrictions. Everybody has the station of life. Everybody has the societies in. We all have different barriers and different constraints and different structures. This is my given. And we always look at it as an obstacle or as a barrier, as something which, if it wasn't there, then we would the sky is the limit. The sky is the limit is a place where a person doesn't exist anymore. If a person doesn't have a sense of restraint, constraint, and boundaries, then there is no. Then the person himself stops being a person. And whether on a psychological level, it's drugs out of boredom, whether it's crime out of a sense of impunity. Doesn't make a difference. A person needs to have that sense of it. It's one of those things that, I guess, as we'll jump ahead, a little teaser for Rabbi Reingold for next. You know, when it comes to kids, to chinuch of kids, like I said, my parents were European, and the mentality was we lacked so much, our children should not lack anything. Which, you know, I mean, the Mrs. Nefesh of those parents, everything for the children, nothing for themselves, and so on. But it's not good. Boundaries are really what give a person a sense of being. I don't want to go far off tangent, but it's just a very important thing. A child that has reasonable boundaries is much happier than a child that has no boundaries. When you pay some price for something, it's a much better arrangement than you pay nothing. I mean, you know, I don't mean to go into any details, but I'm saying the sense of limitlessness is, that's what he says over here. A person survives only within constraints, which he calls 49. If you push past those constraints, then you're a goner, and you have no metzias. Ki ein lo metzias shem b'shar ha-mishim. V'lachein, kasha homo ne magbiat zeh osatz malokis, Haman's downfall was where he said, nah, I'm beyond any mortal interaction. I'm better than that. That's where you got it. Dovazei ha-hedesh lo misoso, ulefikoch nitas kevar ha-mishim. So it's the point of rising up against it that was his undoing. I want to talk a little bit about this in a little bit of a broader context in a minute. It says Amalek was a terrible enemy of Klal Yisrael. It's described as jumping into a hot bath to show people that there's nothing to be scared of. In other words, it's the person that sort of demonstrates the nation, the person, that authority or law is really not important, not significant. I want to explain a little bit some of the Yetzirah for that. It's a person has in himself two parts. He has a guf and he has a neshama. The neshama by its own, by its essence, is quote-unquote born free. It doesn't have constraints. It is divine-like. It's God-like. It doesn't have anything that can constrain it and say, a neshama goes only from here to here, it can only do this. A neshama really, in itself, is boundless. And that's why a person has endless drive. Very few occasions in life people say, okay, I've done enough and this and that. If he's made enough money, it's because he wants to do fishing unlimited. No, you know, very few people get to a point, as long as they have something that they want, they're not going to say it's enough and so on and so forth. The neshama in itself is unlimited and aspires. The person mitzad the guf is clearly limited. And what drives a person for accomplishment in ruchnius is in unlimited way is this drive. And there it's good, and there it's positive, as long as a person does it in sensible stages. But when a person crosses the two and he takes his physical self, whether it's money, whether it's pleasure, whether it's domination, any one of those elements, and a person attaches to it the drives of unlimited, that is where a person comes into a clash with God. And it's really, if I have to ask ourselves, In a big picture, what is it that science with a capital S, what drove it? And I want to refer to something, actually. Rav Soloveitchik has a book called Isha Emuna, Lonely Man of Faith, and he starts his introduction, he has a very, very interesting explanation, I say description is a better word, of the difference between the man of religion and the man of science. He said a person sees a huge mountain, an incredibly huge mountain. There are two reactions. One is, oh my gosh, it's put me in my place. And one reaction is, how do we climb the mountain? How do we reduce the mountain in size? How do we build a road over it, under it? So obviously, on the physical world, the person is redu arz kipshua. We're supposed to tame the world and make it useful. But a person is never supposed to lose the sense of being overwhelmed. The sense of my being limited, of my being insignificant, of my being mortal, is the yesod of religion. That man is great when I look around at the world and the animals. I'm the custodian, I'm the intelligence, I'm the creator. When I turn to God, I am off of Afer. The ruach of needing to build a theory to push God out of the picture comes from that crossing of a human limitless drive and applying it to his mind. We are smart enough to do everything and anything. And that itself became the Yetzer Hara that's similar to Avodah Zarah in those days. That's Avodah Zarah. In other words, it bothers us to have God in the picture, because as long as God is around, we're mortals. Push God out, and we've become gods. And Amalek represents fighting Klal Yisrael was God can be fought. In other words, man need not humble himself to something bigger. Humbling himself to the bigger and to the greater is the escape of the feeble-minded. The bright, the intelligent, the courageous, the brave are not scared of that either. In a certain sense, it is probably the inner core of an intelligent person's Yetzer Hara, and when Avodah Zarah in one form disappeared, this took over. So Haman, as a person personifying it, as a sign of it, and as sort of personifying Amalek, that was a point of it. So basically, that's the point of this point. In number four is a medrash that says something very similar. We'll just read it, and he interprets it in line with this. Achad varim eila gidal amelech as Haman. Amar Rav Akiva ad heichan god gidloi. How tall did he make him? Ad eitz shel chamishim ama. He made him as tall as 50 ama. Shenem vayasa eitz kavoy chamishim ama. In other words, how big did God inflated his standing and his ego? How big? To the point of 50. In other words, you can almost hear that resonating in Chazal's description. And then Chazal say, me'al kol, it says, he was more than kol, adet chamne tolui al chamishim ama. Kof esen, lamet los al chamishim. In other words, kol is 50. The gematria of kol, kof alamet, is 50. In other words, he pushed Haman to being bigger than everything in a way that he sort of, that Haman propelled himself out of this universe. He said, well, I have total dominion over everything, so I must be bigger than everything. I must be beyond everything. And that's where that was his downfall. That was the Yitzhar, and that was the downfall. Okay, now we're going to deal with the second point, and that is the point of why hanging of all the death. So he brings in five of Medrash. We're going to skip most of the Medrash. There are many points in them. I'll discuss it. I don't have the time, and I don't want to lose the thread of it. Let's skip down to about three or four lines before the end of that medrash, the black, the darker letters. The umaro loyma letzalvo. Why did he say to hang him? It's interesting. The word hatslava, the word slav, in modern language means a cross. The Romans, you know, crucifying people, they strung them out. But sliva in the Gemara, in the Gemara's Lashon, it means the act of displaying the person that's killed, and hanging was most prominent. The particular form that the Romans used it's not the only, it's a specific example of it. Because of modern language, that slav is a cross in Hebrew, so people associate with a cross. Tzliva is hanging, and the elements of it are the hanging itself and the display of the person. That's sort of what the tzliva is. So why tzliva? Ela Omar, Haman said, Hare shor shemikol dover, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yochel lahatzil. Avro min ha'esh, Yitzhak min ha'keda, Yaakov min ha'malach, Omoshe v'cher paro, Yisrael min ha'yam, v'chei mikol dover, U'min ha'tzlav v'ni yochel lahatzil. He said, I've gone through all of Chumash. I studied God's tactics. And I found that he can save people from being drowned, from fire, from everything. Hanging, he's never saved anybody from be hanging, so hanging must be the thing. That's the Chazal. And again, Chazal speak cryptically, and they, you need to understand what they want. Let's skip. Most of this deals with the first part of it, and we want to get on to number 10 in the paragraphs. If you have a page, then you have the wrong page. The Amar Maro Litzalvo V'lo B'Shar Mises V'alze Amar Kimin Atzliva Lo Yuchal Ozro. He said because HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot save him from hanging. Ratzoloima B'ze. What does he mean with that? Ki Atzliva M'Yuchad M'Shar Mises We find, it says, the halacha was, it's a pasuk in Chumash, the halacha is that anyone who is stoned to death is hung up afterwards for that day, and at night you have to take it off because it's a terrible, terrible humiliation for someone in a divine image. And the lashon of the pasuk is, kilas alokim toli. In some way, it's defaming God. In some way, it sort of is defacing something divine. Let's explain this point over here about the hanging and so on. A person consists of a body, and that body is quite similar to most other living entities, same biology, you know, similar enough, and so on. And a person consists of an neshama, which we don't see, we don't have any real way of touching it, and so on. And that's divine, and so on. If when we speak about a person having a tzelem Elokim, almost all the commentaries speak about the word tzelem can't mean image in a physical sense. Obviously, God has no image and so on. But when you look at a person who's living, there's something about the person more than the sum of the pieces. We say, when you look on a tzaddik's face, you say, it's some sort of aura to the person. Something about the person. The expression on a person's face that a living person, that living endows the person with, is a sense of being more than just the flesh and the bones. No animal begins even while on a physical level. An animal has many many similarities depending on the different animals and so on, but in the sense of the facial aura, there's nothing like it in any Baal Chai. The person's Tzelem Elokim is expressed not in the physical features of the face, but in the sense that life endows on a person's face. And that's why embarrassing somebody, where a person drains of color and it sort of becomes lifeless, is like killing. Because killing is the act of separating out the neshama from the guf. The tragedy of death doesn't lie in the guf rotting. The guf is a guf. It's physical. The neshama goes to Gan Eden. So that's not death. Death is because when they were together, something else was generated that we call it Tzelem Elokim. And we most... And the closest we come to having a sense of it is on the person's face and so on. When a person, and that's why when a person is nifta, the dignity is to cover him, because it's a terrible, those who've been in proximity of a nifta, it's shocking that it's a very different person. It's just not the person anymore. And there's something very, very, there's a travesty almost of something that had a spark of divinity associated with him, and it's hollowed out. It's no longer there. And that's a bizoyin hames. And in as much as a person is tzalim elokim, in a sense it's a bizoyin of tzalim elokim. Because it's ke'ilu, what was a divine presence has been driven out. It shouldn't be able to happen. A divine entity should not be able to disappear. So it's a killas olokim toliboy. When you display somebody who is loleinu a nifter, you are in effect emptying out. You're sort of showing something which should be divine as not being divine anymore. And in that sense, it's klap HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tzachil shemayim, tzachil Hashem of some degree. So therefore, hanging somebody, killing somebody by that type of death is like that. I want to add something to it also. Also, by killing the person through choking, which is what Taliya does, in a sense, the body is intact, and what you've done is you've sort of all the other mises, they do something to the body. Even chanika is in a way which destroys other parts of the body as well, the neck and so on. The tliya is when it, you know, the tliya means you took the person and voided the breath of life from the person. So Haman says, you know, God can be attacked. It's like if you look at the symptoms, then you can't get to it. But I'm going to take him on head on. The place in the world where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is manifest is Tzalim Elokim. If I can destroy the Tzalim Elokim, that's where I'll get him. I want to add a side point, some of mine. It says, the Gemara says that somebody who does an avera of arayas specifically, which is a terrible physical indulgence, the person loses the Tzalim Elokim. It's some degree, and you see a person who's very physical, is very crass, and his indulgence. People who indulge, you see it on the person. It's the opposite of that aura of Elokus. Bilam said when he wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael, he said, "You know, I've got to hit home. Elokim shel son izima. If I'm able to get rid of the Tzalim Elokim, like it says in the pasuk, Yisar Tzilam. If I get rid of that." That's it. I don't need more than that. The point where I can attack HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kaviyach, so to speak, is at that point. And that's what Haman said. If there's a place where I'm going to face off against what they call divine, it's going to be that. It's going to be on the Tzalim Elokim. And he says here, he brings down an 11, a mashal, which the Medrash says here. Umevi mashal le'echad sherotze la'abed es echad. Somebody was trying to destroy somebody else, kill somebody else. And this person is backed by a very powerful person. Amma. So the guy said like this. If I want to focus on fighting the person that I want to fight, the strong person is going to he's going to fight against me, and I will be helpless. It's a mistake to fight this guy. This guy's a pawn. I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to waste my time fighting. I'm going to fight the king of the operations. That's exactly what they said. If you're able to hit home at the central point, at the divinity associated with Mordechai, ubaze lokoch Mordechai, ulatzos lokov. So basically, they said we're going to hit home at the point that is the God of Mordechai. That's what we'll be able to. And less sense that paragraph. And that's why 50 amma is the fullness of that display. It's sort of 50 for reasons that he gave and other reasons. 50 is like as public as can be. when in a public way we defrack the God, their God, that's when we have triumph. I want to tell a story I once heard from somebody. Incredible story. I don't remember. I heard it from somebody who heard it from the people. Somebody told me he had a relative who was a rabbi in Germany during the Nazi years, and he would always sleep in his clothing, in his garments, and so on. And he said one of the Gestapo's favorite cruelties is to come in the middle of the night, grab them as they are sleeping, the pajamas, whatever, drag them out, and then hang them. He said, something to preserve that dignity, you know, that's what I'm doing. I know that the chances of being of living is not great, but at least it creates a tremendous indignity that crushes people when they see it, and therefore I will at least preserve that. And this was so basically Haman's thought process, and his son and the other ones was that as well. So we have two points here. We have one point, the Chamishim Ama, and we have another point about the Tzel Malakim. Let's maybe, we have a little bit of time left. I want to maybe just the next small piece. It's not the third piece I spoke about, but I think it just to see what Chazal, how Chazal are, how every word of theirs is so significant. 13. It says, Vayas ha'etz. He made a tree. Ba'ois ha'shah. The splinter came to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, Ribbono Shel Olam, ani she'ein li ma'alit lois. I don't have what to hang. Ke'eten es atzmi v'yitla tomei zeh she'nikra shmoi. I want to be the one that will hang this tomei person, Haman, who's called Kotz Machiv, a splinter that hurts. V'noad litlos coats al coats, it's so appropriate to hang a splinter on a splinter. U'mimenu matzo vaso, and it's in the piyutim. It's called a coats. I mean, it's the Gemara calls them coats, and the piyutim use it. What's I mean? Yeah, it's a splinter hurts. Fine. What is expressing the coats? He says pirish ka coats miyuchad azeh. V'loma miyuchad azeh akoitz lefisha akoitz silon mame v'koitz machiv. A splinter is something that enters, festers, and causes great distress. He's a thorn in their side and the opposite of everything. And Kamosha Kassel like says by a molik and so on. I want to explain, and he says, let me explain it outside so we get the sense of it. There are, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created different destructive materials in the world. Metal is the most destructive thing, and Chazal say that metal, if you kill somebody using a metal device, there's almost no shear because metal can be dangerous in any shear, and swords are made of metal and pikes and so forth. Metal attacks from the outside and it kills. Wood is much softer. If anyone, my children grew up next to stroll, and whenever their heads would thud on the stone floor, you get a heart attack, you hear a bump. In America, it's wood, the carpet's much better. Wood is flexible, it's not such a, it's not such a strong material. It's not used for attacking. But wood has a fascinating property that a splinter gets into a person and causes infection and so on. It hurts, thorns, splinters. These are things that the way in which they affect a person is by getting inside, because they're so easy to get inside, and then it creates the stress and so on. Amalek and Haman, they actually try to get into Klal Yisrael. We think of Amalek as an outside an enemy. The Torah says Asher Karcha Baderech. It says Vayizanef V'cho Kol Nechsholim Achrecha. He always, he wasn't out to fight them as an external enemy. They're coming against us, we're going to fight and so on. What Amalek did was, he wanted to worm his way inside of Klal Yisrael. And that's why it's so dangerous, because it doesn't look terribly harmful. And that's, and this is one of the reasons people always speak about certain Eretz Yisrael, where the Gedolim place tremendous restrictions on education and so on, and it's always a seesaw. It's a problem. We need to live in a culture that's not ours. We need to deal with it. We need to be comfortable and acquainted enough to be able to reach a certain modus vivendi. We live with it, we deal with it, we're part of it, and so on. But every time it's like a computer. I don't know what Mishalim they use for the computers, because computers are something good Mishalim. Every time the computer asks you, do you really want to download this, and you press yes, you let something in, and you hope that it's a good program. You hope that it's not, you know, a virus or malware, whatever it is. But the minute you let something in, it's much worse than from the outside. It's very hard to hack a computer from the outside. You can't zap a computer. Something has to let you in. And the chacham is to get the computer to let you in, and so on. So the Amalek is Klal Yisrael's enemy, because it's sort of, it's reaching for the jugular. It knows, it stands in stark contrast to the biggest, to the most important Nekudah of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael's Nekudah is, yes, we're smart, we're wonderful, we do tremendous things, our competence are unlimited, but it is terribly limited. We're off of Eifa, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Lechol Etz Kvodo. And that's what Klal Yisrael is, an extraordinary ambition to accomplish, and a sense of being overwhelmed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Tzelem Elokim in a person. The Tzelem Elokim is that tension between a limitless spirit and a limited body, and a person's understanding of that role. Amalek was a force in the world that was bothered by that and said, as long as there's somebody who presents a Tzelem Elokim in the world, then people will realize that's the real thing. That's the emes. That was the quality of Klal Yisrael that bothered him, and that's why he tried to go for that specifically. The hallmark of people who are Amalek type, a Haman type, is the arrogance where there's no limit anymore. Because if there is nothing other than me, then what's to stop me in any way? So not everybody's a murderer, not everybody's a thief, but I can say anything, I can do anything, I can decide morality as I wish. It's the person has nothing to contain himself, and the Haman, like everything that's bad, it kills itself. Because he transcended limits, then he disappeared. Man doesn't exist. Once a person breaks all barriers, then the person is gone. There are two things that are infinite: HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Tahom is called Ein Lam Seif. It's a Tahom, that point. And Purim is the demonstration of that, where a person's sense of unbridled ambition and self transcended any gvulas, and v'chol zeinen shavli, and that itself became the person hung himself on the highest tree, because that's where he was reaching for. We should have a fellow for Purim, and we should be zochet to have that Tzelem Elokim even when we drink, and we should be and in these inyanim, it's a wonderful day. It is a very nice day for children, everybody, but it's important that as adults and as people with some depth, for them to devote some time understanding the depth of it and what Purim means. Both the first thought that I said, as somebody who's of that generation, I feel strongly, and in these inyanim here, that this hasn't stopped. People are very nice and very intelligent, everything, but it's you know, I mean, I read, you know, I was reading this, the great quote-unquote French philosophers of the 40s and 50s who decided that communism is fantastic and this is like this, not like that, and said, oh yeah, now that we did possibly make a mistake. And yeah, a few hundred million people died, but you know, I think we miscalculated. The hubris of people who don't recognize that a mortal is mortal and limited, and there's a das above a person, it leads to no good ever came out of that type of arrogance and that type of sense of self.
If it's just possible for those not Davin Maariv to just step out, that's the